Welcome to episode 23 of the Slouching Towards Thatcham Parenting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim. Every week, I chat with a fellow parent blogger, and we each read one of our favourite posts, bringing you bite-sized chunks of blogging brilliance in audio form. It's a bit like the 50 Shades of Grey audiobook, only with better writing. This week, I'm delighted to be joined by Hannah, who you may know from her blog Budding Smiles. Hi there, Hannah.
Hi, Tim.
To start with, why don't you tell us a little bit about you and your soon-to-be expanding family?
Sure, thanks. So, as you said, I blog over at Budding Smiles. I started my blog when I was pregnant with my son Toby, who's now 18 months old. He and my husband Phil and I live in a little cottage in the countryside, and we are currently awaiting the arrival of our second child, who's a little girl due in April. I used to work in special needs education for about 10 years and then made the decision to give that up after Toby was born, and now do a lot more on the blogging and social media and copywriting side of things.
That's great. So what made you choose the name Budding Smiles, and what sort of things do you typically write about?
It was one of those things. My husband and I were brainstorming for quite a while, and I was just coming up with different words that I liked more than trying to think of a whole title. And I just sort of said to him, you know, I want it to be about raising and blossoming and helping the kids to blossom and grow. And then I just sort of said, you know, like a flower that's coming into bloom and buds and making them smile. I was like, oh, flowers, budding, smiles, budding as in having some sort of ambition. I like it. And it just stuck, really. So it wasn't very well planned. It just sort of came to me in a flash of inspiration.
Yeah, and that's great. And it's, yeah, it's a lovely distinctive name as well that's easy to remember. So could you now just give us a little bit of background to the post that you're going to be reading for us today?
Sure. So the post I'm going to be reading, I called it Why I'm Not Censoring My Language for My Kids. Now, obviously, the first thing you think of there is swearing, which isn't really what I'm talking about. It came from me having read some articles over recent months. And it seemed to me that us as parents are doing a lot of analysis and sometimes over-analysing what we say to our children. And whilst I'm not all about, you know, being bashed around with wooden spoons and things, I also think that to a certain extent we are maybe taking things a little bit too far in the modern world, whether it's just because the internet means that we can get our messages out there, I don't know. But I read a couple of articles that just sort of made me feel like too many parents are treading on eggshells a little bit when it comes to speaking to their children. And I wanted to explain why I'm not doing so.
Okay, so without further ado then, let's crack on and read your post. So over to you.
Thank you. Okay, before I begin, I'm not talking about swearing here. I don't swear in front of Toby, and I would absolutely never swear at him. I'm talking about the psychobabble, in my humble opinion, whereby parents aren't using certain words or phrases to their children for fear of forever damaging them. I disagree, in case you couldn't tell, so here's why I'm not censoring my language for my kids. In recent months, I've read articles and blogs about why we shouldn't use phrases such as good boy or beautiful girl for a variety of reasons. Apparently, calling Toby a good boy when he does something good is detrimental because it invalidates any actions which aren't praised with the term, and by the act of omission, thus tells Toby that the rest of the time he must therefore be bad. Utter, censoring my language, rubbish. Likewise, I've read how parents of girls aren't calling their daughters pretty because they don't want to give them an identity based solely upon their looks. I completely agree that a girl shouldn't think that her looks are her only strength in life, but alongside telling baby girl that she's pretty, which I don't doubt that she will be, I will also tell her that she is clever, that she is strong, that she is a good girl. I also tell Toby that he's gorgeous and beautiful, as well as being clever, strong, and good. Back to the good topic. When Toby does something right, I tell him he's a good boy. As the words leave my lips, I can guarantee that Toby is not dissolving into a panicked frenzy about the fact that what I really mean is that in every other moment of his life, he is bad, because I don't. What I'm reading more and more is that we basically have to walk on eggshells with our children, for fear that we are going to forever damage their self-image. I prefer to think that by telling Toby and soon his sister that they are all of the above things, that they will believe me, they will know that they are loved, and they will feel confident. Likewise, when they display negative behaviours, I will tell them so, because they need to know where the boundaries lie. Toby has recently started pulling the cat's tail and trying to switch the oven on. Both of those delightful new endeavours could be dangerous for him, and in the case of the tail, one bad pull could render our previously injured cat incontinent, and we would have no choice but to put an otherwise healthy cat down. Are those actions and their consequences bad? Yes, so I tell him that they are. I don't say, "Toby, you are naughty. You are a bad child." I say, "Toby, it is bad to pull the cat's tail. Toby, don't touch the oven. It's hot." We are our children's primary educators during their formative early years. Irrespective of what is on the TV or anywhere else in their lives, it is us as their parents who are responsible for developing their sense of identity and self-worth. I want my daughter to know that she is pretty because it matters. I want my son to know that he has done something good because it matters. I also want my daughter to know that she is clever, that she can achieve her goals, that she can go to ballet or football or both. Likewise for Toby, as well as the fact that he is gorgeous. I don't want my children to base their entire identities upon their looks, but I also don't want them to feel ugly because they've never been told otherwise. It's about balanced language. I want them to feel strong, empowered, confident, to have high morals and ethics, to know that their mummy and daddy love them with every ounce of our being. That's the important language. And not telling them to. F off.
Thanks, Hannah. I have to say I agree with you. I think it's so easy to tie ourselves up in knots, worrying about what we should or what we shouldn't say. But I think for me, that as long as we're honest and consistent in how we communicate with our kids, then I guess they'll always know where they stand. And that's surely the important thing, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's what I think. I mean, if I tell Toby why I think something that he's done is good, you know, and sort of I'm just guiding him to understand where the boundaries are of good and bad and right and wrong and all the rest of it. I think that's our job, really.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely right. So, Hannah, thanks very much for taking the time to join me on this week's podcast, and good luck with the rest of your pregnancy.
Thank you very much, and thanks for having me.
If you want to read more of Hannah's writing, go to buddingsmiles.co.uk or follow her on Twitter @buddingsmiles. I'll attach blog and social media links on the show notes over on slouchingtowardsthatcham.com. The need for censorship is something we become increasingly attuned to when we become parents, whether it's how we talk to our children or the language, images or topics that they're exposed to via the media and other external sources. Now, I'm old enough to remember the furore that arose back in 1983 over the lyrics of Frankie Goes to Hollywood's chart-topping single, Relax. In October 2013, I marked the 30th anniversary of the song's release with some thoughts about how changing standards have created a censorship minefield for modern parents. Relax? That's easy for you to say. 30 years ago today, a 5-piece band from Liverpool released their debut track. It went on to become the 7th best-selling UK single of all time and helped them to become only the second act ever to top the UK singles chart with each of their first 3 singles. It did the song's popularity no harm at all that it was banned by the BBC on the grounds of its sexually suggestive lyrics. I am, of course, talking about Frankie Goes to Hollywood's Relax. I was 13 at the time, so naturally I found the whole affair thoroughly amusing, as the BBC's actions, they condemned the song, refusing to play it on either the radio or its flagship TV programme Top of the Pops, served only to fan the flames, catapulting it to number one for 5 weeks and boosting sales to nearly 2 million copies. Today, as a parent of 3 young and music-loving children, I take the whole matter of explicit and suggestive lyrics somewhat more seriously. Listen to any top 40 single these days, and there's a good chance it will contain something to give a parent pause, even if there's usually a more family-friendly radio edit also available. And it's not just those nasty gangster rapper dudes either. Here's a sample of lyrics from three mainstream hits from the past couple of years. Let's start with the merely awkward and suggestive, Katy Perry's Last Friday Night. Last Friday night, we went streaking in the park, skinny dipping in the dark, then had a menage a trois. Last Friday night. Then the use of, how shall I put it, industrial language, Maroon 5's Payphone. And finally, well, you judge for yourself. Robin Thicke's Blurred Lines. Hit me up when you pass through. I give you something big enough to tell your ass to. See what I mean? So what's a concerned parent to do? Yes, I know I can go to iTunes and download clean versions of most songs. But first you have to know that the original contains explicit lyrics. Which, when your kids are constantly exposed to the clean versions playing on radio and TV, and demanding you create them new playlists, requires a certain degree of policing before downloading. Checking for explicit lyrics in iTunes is easy enough. But then you also need to be aware of non-explicit but suggestive verbiage, such as the Katy Perry example above. That requires an additional scan of the lyrics online just to make sure I haven't missed something. Then, and only then, do I feel I know what I'm letting myself in for when I click buy. Am I being overprotective? Maybe a little. But at the same time, I've made a conscious decision to allow them to watch videos featuring artists such as Rihanna, Lady Gaga, and countless others, who frequently appear in attire that would count as being underdressed on the beach. I choose not to draw the line there. Many parents would. But you have to draw it somewhere, right? As an unapologetic 1980s nostalgist, I often look back on the decade of my teen years as being a better time, something of a golden era. It was an altogether more innocent time, where we could watch Wham on Top of the Pops and not immediately realise that George Michael was so obviously gay. It was a time when the suggestive nature of Relax was the exception, rather than the rule. When it comes to the lyrical content of the music my kids listen to, I really wish they were growing up in the 80s too. Relax? I wish I could. It's easier said than done. I don't want to have to be the one to have to answer the question, Daddy, what's a ménage à trois? And that's it for this episode of the Slouching Towards Thatcham podcast. If you'd like to listen to either future or previous episodes, you'll find them published on the blog, and also on iTunes, YouTube, and various other podcasting sites. You can follow me on the blog at slouchingtowardsthatcham.com, on Twitter at ThatchamDad, and on various other social media channels. You'll find links to all of the above, plus Hannah's links, in the show notes on the blog. All that remains is for me to say thank you all for listening to this podcast, and hopefully you'll join me again next week. Until then, goodbye.